welcome to the Monday podcast. I'm your host, Rob Hearn. With me today is Fraser McInnes.
Hi.
No, Chris again. He's been ill. He's been off for 4 days now.
Yeah.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Now it's Monday. Still no sign of him.
That's one.
You know, if anybody's heard anything, do get in touch with the police.
Or... do let us know. It could be maybe he went into the YMCA to be sick again, like on the work night out, and got stuck there somehow.
Decided on a dramatic change of lifestyle.
Yeah.
looked around him, all the people with their trousers held up by shoestrings, and said, "You know what? This is for me. I'm sick of the cut and thrust of business.
Yeah.
I want to, you know, live in the YMCA."
Definitely.
Sit outside the YMCA drinking strong lager and making friendly comments to female passers by.
Yeah, and why not? Really, why not? But if anyone has seen him, do tell us. We're getting worried.
Yeah. So there's no Chris. So it's just Fraser and I, and we're going to be talking about some games before running through the reviews of the week. So the games... some exciting one, well, one exciting one, I suppose. And then two, then one exciting one, one high profile one, which is, I think, fair to say, not very exciting, and one pretty interesting one that is not very high profile, but I hope people buy. So let's finish with the obvious. Let's get Dawn of the Dead out of the way first, shall we?
Right, okay, let's do that.
Let's just finish with it. Okay, so Dawn of the Dead is it a George Romero film?
Yes.
About zombies. It's a satire. I haven't seen it. You could probably talk better about this, but it's a satire, isn't it?
I have seen it. Yes, it is. It's a satire on consumer culture and being set in a mall. It's basically the premise of the film is there's been a zombie outbreak and a bunch of survivors have headed to a mall. Which is obviously stocked heavily with supplies to help them survive, and it's about their kind of last stand, and it gets to the point where, you know, they're getting quite bored in the mall, and they're watching these zombies kind of stagger around the car park, and that's obviously a kind of an amusing metaphor about the way in which people shop these days, and you know they get up to all sorts of mischief in the mall. They go daft with the sports equipment and you know they indulge themselves in various other bits and pieces, but you know obviously tensions arise and ultimately they can't stay there forever and they have to make a break for it, and that is pretty much where the film ends, actually. But yeah, it's an entertaining romp, if you like.
Okay, and so this game is a twin stick shooter based on the film.
Yeah.
There's a recent film. Do you think it's based on the recent film or the old film?
I think it's based on the recent film, yeah. The old film is brilliant as well. The recent one I didn't enjoy as much. I quite like the original. The recent one's good, but it's not brilliant. And I think this one's based on the more recent film because the characters do look a lot more alike the characters from the recent film. So.
Okay. I saw Zombieland recently, by the way.
Oh, really? Is it good?
Yeah. It's fine. It's got that guy out of Adventureland. He's obviously working on film, just exclusively on films with land at the end of the title. he's a bit like, what's his name? The guy who plays George Michael in Arrested Development.
And Michael Cerys.
Cerys, yeah. He's got the same kind of dazed quality as him.
So yeah, I know the guy you mean, yeah.
Yeah, you like him, but you get a sense that he's a very, very limited actor who... has the appearance of kind of intelligence and charming, kind of confounded air, but you don't see him doing any other role, any roles where he's not basically performing, doing that. But yeah, Zombieland is fine. It's got a really good cameo. I won't tell you who performs the cameo, but
okay.
It's kind of worth watching just for that. It's not bad. It's a buddy movie with zombies.
Cool.
Check it out. Why not? So this is game. Twisted. I think, you know, I think we're kind of avoiding... talking about the game in a way.
Yeah, I feel like that. Yeah.
So shall we have our minutes?
I'll go first. Let's weigh in.
Explanation.
Okay, cool.
Okay, here we go. I'll time myself. So it's a twin stick shooter. Camera seems to be very close to the action, so you can't see all that much. You have big chap in the middle He's got a baseball bat or a pistol. He can use either. The controls, they're a bit twitchy, I suppose. They're not the best, but, you know, they're functional. The problem is, and when you start the game, it says, just under the where it says Dawn of the Dead, it says, buy the movie.
Yeah.
And I think that sets its stall out. It makes it clear that this is kind of a promotional tool for the film or something else. It doesn't really feel like a game in its own right. So it's a twin stick shooter. You walk around, you batter zombies. I played the first level, or some of it, killed a few zombies, then I went up to a door, it said you need a key, and I just walked around for about 15 minutes, like without a pointer telling me where to go or anything like that. Didn't meet any more zombies.
Duck. Okay. I'll pick up from where you left off. Are you timing me?
Yep, here we go. Yep, timing.
Okay, I made it onto the third level of this. I second Rob's criticisms of the game. It's not very good. It's an advert game, really. And for that reason, I don't think we should necessarily expect too much of it. And that's just as well, because it doesn't deliver an awful lot. You can switch weapons between levels. So when you get past the first level, it gives you the option of choosing. It unlocks new weapons, and you can choose one melee and one kind of gun. And my biggest problem with this game is that the right stick is just hopeless. You seem to have to tap it to hit, but also kind of circle it to face the right direction, and it's really twitchy when it comes to actually facing the correct direction, and it's just not very, very... It's just not very... I don't know, it's difficult to aim, basically. As Rob said as well, you can't see very much of the play area. And it's just a kind of really boring list of objectives, you know, find the key, open the door, kill the zombies, find the key, open the door. It's just rubbish.
So it's, so there you go, there's that one. And it costs, what is it, $179?
Is it really? Goodness.
Oh, I don't know, I'm going to look it up while I'm here.
I think it is. I bought it late last night, just before I went to sleep.
Yeah, so did I. I had some trouble downloading it, actually, weirdly. Although that's neither here nor there. I eventually managed it. Price of games. Still downloading. Oh, yeah, let's say it's $179. It might be $119. So that's that one. Next up, we've got Fleeced Sheer Terror. Sheer as in the cutting tool. It's a pun, basically. It's a pun-based title. To some, the pun is the lowest form of wit, but not to me.
No. But surely sheer isn't the noun. Sheer is the verb, to shear. And shears is the noun, no?
The noun, what do you mean?
As in the object.
The object is... they are shears, yeah.
Yeah.
They're saying sheer terror, but to say sheer, like, sheer terror... is two E's. I experienced sheer terror.
Okay.
Fleeced is sheer terror. So,
okay.
Yeah.
But to shear, I'm going to shear some sheep. That's the verb.
Yeah.
Never mind.
I don't know where you're going with this verb announcing. I think it's fine. I think it actually,
because you said shear being a play on the object shears, as in like the implement that you use. But never mind. I'm being a pedantic.
It still is that, but it's shearing. So you do shear a sheep. So it's so it works. It's terror derived from shearing.
Yeah.
Terror related to shearing. Sheer terror.
Sheer terror. Yeah.
How do you feel? You look a bit scared. Oh God, I'm experiencing sheer terror. There's a man over there with some shears. It's fine.
It's a very specific type of terror, isn't it?
Yeah. No, but it's it's documented.
Yeah. Great.
So that's the game. I'll explain this one. It's quite an unusual game, actually. You play... It's a mix of different gaming styles. You are in a little kind of pen, and in the pen is a llama, I think. It's set in some Hispanic country, Mexico, you know, or somewhere in South America. I don't know, I forget. And so you have a little pen with a llama, and your opponent also has a pen with a llama in it. Outside each pen... there is a bandito type man trying to get in to shear your llama, to steal some of its hair, I guess. You and so and what you're trying to do is try and make your opponent, the person in the other pen, lose more of his llamas fur than you lose yours. And the way that you go about this is you have a cannon, and you fire the cannon, and you take down sections of the wall to their pen. If you take down a section of the wall enough and the bandito is close to the hole, in he goes and he takes them fur. If you do this a few times, you win. You have to buy the cannons, and you have to buy upgrades to your wall, although you can repair them for free. And the means by which you buy them is money which you collect with your little guy. The mixture of gaming styles is this. You can directly control the little man inside the pen, and you run him around to pick up coins and stuff, and you run him next to the cannon to fire it. Then you press the cannon button, you fire. And then as soon as you do that, you actually control the trajectory of the projectile. And by tilting your handset, tipping it back and forward and tilting it left and right, you can control where your cannonball is going to go. So there's this kind of... It's quite action-y. So it's this mix of real-time strategy game, because you've got to decide whether or not you're going to spend your time repairing the wall, what kind of guns to spend your money on. As you go through the game, you get increasingly powerful guns, but they cost more. So you have to sort of manage your resources. You have to decide what you're going to do at any given time. So there are real-time strategy elements, but there's an action element, particularly in terms of how you control the cannonball. That's the most action-y thing about it. So it's an unusual mix of gaming styles. That's about it, really.
Yeah.
There's any more explaining to do. So do you want to start us off with this one?
Okay.
Just a minute. We are timing now.
Right. I'm not massively keen on this game. It could be to do with the fact that I've not spent enough time with it. It's got that interesting balance of gameplay style. So it's sort of almost like a turn-based strategy game to an extent, in that you're basically trying to weaken your opponent's defenses enough so that this bandito can get in and shear the sheep. And you've got to try and do that. And so you've got to balance doing that between repairing your own defenses. And you can upgrade your defenses and stuff as well, which, you collect coins for, etc., which Rob's already gone through. But I think really my problem with this game is I don't like the targeting system for the cannon. I found that really woolly. When you're moving the ball through the air, because you've got to tilt the device, and the cannonball's almost landed by the time you actually get around to kind of orienting yourself enough to be able to target accurately. And I don't know. I mean, it looks really, really charming, and it's what I want to like it, but...
Okay. So that's your minute. I shall start mine now. Actually, I really liked it, although I think it is limited. I think the mix of gaming styles, for me, really, really worked, just because it was so kind of nice and charming. The controlling the cannonball, I'm not sure I agree necessarily. I think actually that there is a kind of skill to it, and as you play, you learn to kind of direct it near where the bandito is, and you can do that. It's perhaps a little bit twitchy, but actually I thought that was fine. I thought there was a difficult balance to strike, because there are lots of different things you've got to spend your time doing, and I think by and large it strikes it well in that you can acquire the skill of learning when to build the wall and when to put the cannon down. So because of that, I think it works really well. I think the big problem with it is it's limited. That's all. So, but I played it for half an hour last night, and by that time I felt like I'd got everything I was possibly going to get out. But there are a range of multiplayer options, and that I imagine would extend its life.
Okay. So that's that game.
So that's a thumb up and a thumb down, I think.
Yeah, it is a thumb down. I feel guilty about it, though. I feel like maybe it's my fault. I don't know why that I don't like this game. But I'm going to stick to my thumbs down for now, I think.
Okay. You're wrong. Okay, so let's get to the meat of this, shall we?
Let's.
Also, it's your turn to introduce. So please introduce.
Okay. The game, of course, is Grand Theft Auto Chinatown Wars, already released originally on DS and then subsequently on PSP. The iPhone version is the same but different, and it's the same game, but there's obviously various concessions have been made to fit the game to the platform. You play Huang Li, I believe, is that his name? Who is the spoiled son of a kind of nefarious gang boss, triad boss, who likes gambling and cheap women, who's recently died. And you are en route to deliver a kind of family heirloom, a sword that your dad won in a gambling match, to the new family patriarch, who is your uncle Kenny. And that is basically the kind of setup for the game. What happens is on your way there, this is all in the intro, so it's not much of a spoiler, but on your way there, you are accosted by another gang, you're shot and thrown into a river and left for dead, and the sword is stolen. And from then on, it's sort of like a kind of that's kind of like a massive blow to your family, and it's all about you trying to reestablish the family and trying to climb the ladder. So it's definitely going back to that idea of becoming a growing power, in the same style as you know, the Vice City era of GTA games. And yeah, so really, it's from then it's sort of a top down thing, but with a dynamic camera, so the camera rotates with you depending on what direction you're facing, whether you're in a car or on foot. And yeah, it's missions where you have to, you know, ferry around cargo, or get into gunfights, or perform various other kind of drop off missions and this kind of thing. And yeah, it's got a really strong narrative thread throughout it via various sort of comic book style cutscenes. And other than that, it's GTA as you know and love. So that is ultimately GTA Chinatown Wars in a nutshell.
Okay.
Okay.
Then I guess I will start with the evaluation.
All right.
Here we go. Change it. I'm sick of duck. Robot.
Ooh.
Oh yeah. Yes, that's the one. So let's go. So Chinatown Wars, I suppose there are two ways to criticize it. Is it a good conversion and is it a good game? So in terms of it being a conversion, I think they do a good job, yeah. There are moments where it's a bit fiddly, but you do get used to the controls. You get used to, you learn where the brakes are, you learn where the accelerator is. And the targeting system is not ideal, but by and large, I think it does work. It's perfectly playable, and I enjoyed it. It's very small on the screen, and that does present a problem sometimes. You crash into things a lot until you get used to it. So it's very small, that's the problem. Is it a good game? I think, yeah, as Fraser said, it's got this kind of leveling up mechanic that you had in Vice City and not since in the GTA franchise. And I think that was instrumental in Vice City being such a good game and the best in the series, in my opinion. The problem with Chinatown Wars is that you level up by drugging, and it's you obtain a critical amount of wealth too quickly. And that's a problem with the game. But it's still great.
Okay. Am I keyed up and ready to go?
Here we go, start.
Right, as Rob said, the best thing to do when talking about this game is it a good game and is it a good conversion? Is it a good conversion? Yes, this is definitely, I think, one of the best games to be released on the iPhone in terms of sheer quality and polish. It raises the bar in every way. It's an absolutely, like, it's a really, really well-rounded package. The graphics are amazing, the story's amazing. The controls are really well implemented, and just everything about it from start to finish is the sort of game that, in the same way that if you're watching a really, really good actor on screen performing a character, you forget that it's an actor and you just totally start to believe in the character. This game makes you forget that you're playing a game on an iPhone, and it just becomes the experience itself, and I think that's an achievement. As far as the game itself goes, I think really my problems with it are that I'm kind of starting to fall out of love with the GTA series, and that's perhaps unfair because this game does valiantly do very, very well all of the things that people tend to love about GTA. And so that's, you know, the fighting is good. All right, okay.
So there we are.
There we are.
I think to sum up about this game, as we were saying before the podcast, we were just chatting about it. I think you can criticize it. At the end of the day, it's frigging GTA, and it is GTA in full.
Yeah, absolutely.
And therefore, it's better than, you know, it was developed at great expense, Rockstar, for the DS and then the PSP before coming to the iPhone. It's not like a snackable game developed particularly for the iPhone. It's not a mobile game or anything like that. This is a full-on massive console release, a console event of 2009, early 2009.
Yeah,
I think. And there it is on your iPhone, so it's just naturally, by dint of all of that, by its heritage and everything, it is better than just about everything else on the App Store. So for all that, there are criticisms to make about perhaps the control system, or about the size of things, and about the GTA franchise generally, it is still frigging bloody well GTA in all its glory.
Warts and all, it's good. It's very, 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 very good. I second Rob's comments thoroughly. It's not really fair to criticize this game considering what the competition is. I mean, not that we don't think other iPhone games are great, but this really is a superb achievement on the iPhone, and one that pretty much every iPhone gamer who's interested in games and more hardcore games should definitely own.
Yeah. I think the thing that makes it is, when you compare it to other graphically rich games, like I'm thinking Nova,
it's
very good. You know, that's close to being a kind of console experience. I mean, Chinatown Wars has that, but it's the narrative as well, and that's really key to how good it is. It's not just the graphics and the controls, all of which are good, but it's also the standard of the narrative that's in it. That's really where it departs from anything else.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's what you get from the kind of development history it's at. This is another thing I said to Fraser before the podcast. I feel very much the same way about Monkey Island, is that the mechanics of the game are one thing, but it's that level of narrative you just don't get on mobile devices, really. You get them on DS and PSP, but I don't think, for all that, iPhone is really catching up or has overtaken those two consoles in many respects. The investment of time in making games isn't as high on the iPhone as it is on DS and PSP. So the conversions of older games and of DS and PSP games tend to be the ones that are, in narrative terms, the best. So I really like it. Anyway, for it. I'm not sure if I probably won't finish it because I've already played it on DS. But if you haven't played it on DS or PSP, this comes recommended at £6. So it's the most expensive possible iPhone game.
And yet still, what, £12 cheaper than the DS version and £14 cheaper than the PSP version?
Well, the RRP of both is £30, I think.
Oh, but right, okay.
The DS version you can get on Amazon. Other websites are available, but heck, you might as well just go to Amazon. It's usually the cheapest. Go to Amazon. It's £12 new for Chinatown Wars.
All right,
DS. And, you know, if you have a DS and an iPhone, DS version is probably better, but it costs twice as much, and it's much older. The PSP version is £20. It's much newer, and that's good as well. I haven't played the PSP one, so I can't tell you whether or not how well it compares. But I know that the DS one is probably a bit better. But you know, £6.
There is one feature about the iPhone version that I'd like to mention, and that's that. Obviously, one of the biggest concessions that Rockstar has had to make is on the radio stations, because they couldn't fit all that content on there. And, you know, obviously, one of the things that's lost because of that is the humour in GTA, because a lot of that humour is transmitted via the radio stations, which have amusing discussions on them and silly adverts and all sorts. So that's gone, which is a shame. But in its place is the option to create your own radio station. All you need to do is, in your iPod library, create a new playlist called simply GTA in capital letters, and then it'll automatically appear as a radio station that you can select when you're driving about, when you're playing the game, which I think is really cool.
That's a hell of a bit of functionality.
Yeah.
I've never heard about that. My God, that's good.
Yeah.
Excellent. So, yeah, just bloody well. Just buy it, all right? Yeah, it's good. It's gone straight to the top. This was, I should have mentioned this in the news really, but it's not been out for very long. Straight to the top of the charts. Okay.
Yeah, so, which is, yeah. So, yes, other games, other reviews, games that we have reviewed this week. We're going to run them down.
Go through them in turn. None of this three people thing anymore. Not with Chris, you know, potentially dead. So we're starting with Bird Strike. So I'll just launch into Bird Strike, shall I?
Right, okay.
Bird Strike. Andrew. 7 out of 10. Bronze Award. It's yet another game like Angry Birds, in which birds are the central characters. Not quite as simple as it should be. Bird Strike is nonetheless a fun-filled arcade game packed with style. So it's, you have to go up. It's a bit like Doodle Jump. 7 out of 10.
Okay, next game. Grand Theft Auto Chinatown Wars, 9 out of 10. Tracy Erickson did the review. The lack of a useful targeting system and assorted minor flaws keep Chinatown Wars from perfection, yet not from wowing with its awesome gameplay. So yeah, very, very fair. As always, Tracy is a very fair man when it comes to reviews.
Yep. But not when it comes to loaning money.
No. His rates of interest are astronomical.
Flaboo, 7 out of 10. Bronze Award, reviewed by John Jordan. He lives on the edge, doesn't he?
He does.
When he reviews a game, he plucks games out of the universe, just reviews them. And this is one of them. Flaboo, a well thought out twist on the Doodle Jump, another one. Style of game. Flaboo is only let down by its lack of social features. John really likes Doodle Jump. That's his favourite game. Whenever you ask him.
Yeah.
iPhone game is yours, this Doodle Jump. It's kind of, I guess that's a split opinion because I think it's, I'm not a fan.
I've not even played it. Isn't that terrible? I really must get around to playing that game.
It's right up there. You know, everybody is buying it in the whole world. It's just been in right at the top of the charts forever.
Yeah.
Which I kind of don't get because you play it and all it is going up. You're this thing and it bounces up the screen, and you tilt the handset to make sure it hits platforms, and that's the entire game, really.
Yeah.
Well, obviously the things to shoot, things to kill you, stuff. But I can't get a handle on it. Really, I suppose.
Yeah. Okay. Next game, The Warlock of Firetop Mountain. That got a 7 out of 10. Also reviewed by John Jordan. The Warlock of Firetop Mountain feels dated, but anyone who experienced the fighting fantasy books as a kid should enjoy reliving the past. So yeah, it seems like I think it's some sort of a kind of text adventure, this one, which is an interesting avenue of iPhone gaming that we don't really come across that often, so yeah.
Did you ever read one of those?
I didn't. I never had the necessary hardware to do it. I never had the right kind of computer or anything for that.
No, it's just a book.
I had Choose Your Own Adventure books, but I never had like a text adventure game, you know, when it's like, when you can select from options like go forward or turn left, and it's literally just text instructions, and then it tells you what happens. Oh, you are now in a room with blah de blah de blah, would you like to, and then it gives you a list of options. Never played one of those, but yeah, Choose Your Own Adventure books.
Genre, yeah, well, this is based on a Choose Your Own Adventure.
Right.
Which I used to, like everyone else, I imagine, I used to just cheat at those. Go there, okay, no, killed, okay, I'll go there then.
Yeah.
That's basically how I played.
Yeah.
The text adventures, this is just a tip. There's a game that came out just before Christmas, I think, called Transylvania Adventure. And that's a text adventure. There are graphics, so it's not entirely text, but they're not animated graphics, really. They're just kind of graphics to illustrate. They're illustrations rather than graphics, I suppose, is the best way of describing it. I think it's 59p, but it's one of the first games I ever played on the Apple II, so if you fancy trying out, anybody's listening, fancy trying out Text Adventure and sharing the experience with somebody, then Transylvania is a good way to go. Funny, it's fun.
Yeah.
What's next on the list? Hicks Revenge. Let's see. No reward. I'm working from top down. There's an element of mystery here. Pix Revenge, reviewed by Damien McFerrin. 5 out of 10, I'm afraid. While Pick's Revenge attempts to put a fresh spin on the adventure genre, it's limited by poor visuals, weak characterization, and an absence of genuine humor. This iPhone outing has dug itself into a pretty deep hole from which subsequent episodes will struggle to extract it. Oh dear. That is harsh, isn't it?
That is pretty scathing, yeah. That's
looking at it, it's a nice, looks nice, it's cartoony, but evidently not very good. But, you know, it's interesting what he chooses to pick out. Characterization, humor.
Yeah.
And things like that. So it's criticised on quite a deep level there.
It's true, but I think that those are elements of games that are all too often missing these days, for sure. So yeah, good on Damien for picking up on that. Yeah, next up, another game we've already talked about, Dawn of the Dead, or Yawn of the Dead, as Tracy wittily added to the strapline. It received 5 out of 10, and his summation of it was, poor controls and bland missions render what should have been a surefire hit into a flawed shooter. So I think that's actually quite generous, to be honest with you. I think he's been quite nice there. I would have given it a harsher critique, but that's me. I am a very bitter and twisted individual.
Sounds pissed. Like all the people of Scotland.
Yeah.
I'm fine. Scotch. God, every time I mention Scotland, I feel like going into a kind of self-loathing rant. I was going to tell you about a woman I met at a function in Oban who was telling me how she'd been stealing cheese. She had a handbag full of cheese from the function.
Oh, Jesus. That's horrendous. That's just so horribly typical.
Oh, handbag full of cheese.
Yeah.
The buffet table. Well done, lady. Go back to your island.
Yeah. I quite like Frankie Boyle's joke about how one of the worst things that he's ever seen in Scotland is when he was driving through Greenock and he saw a man leaning against the door taking a piss before he then reached into his pocket and took out his keys and went inside.
He's funny.
Right.
If you're an American listener and you've never heard of Frankie Boyle, check him out on YouTube.
And prepare to be offended.
That's mine. Fleeced, Sheer Terror, we've spoken about that. 8 out of 10. Old Tracy definitely comes down on the Hearn side of things. Cleverly weaving together action and strategy, Fleece Sheer Terror epitomises creative design and competitive fun. So I guess what he's picking up on there, which neither of us were really able to talk about, is the multiplayer.
I genuinely
think that, as I was playing it, I was thinking this would be really good if I was playing against someone.
Yeah, I can see how that would work well as a multiplayer. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I'd have more fun with it that way, I think.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's a silver award winner. Silver. 8 out of 10.
Okay, good stuff. Next up is Toy Mechanic, also reviewed by Damien McFerrin. 7 out of 10. Toy Mechanic is nothing short of stunning, though it's a shame that the overall challenge and replay value is so lacking. So it sounds like a good wholesome once-through game, but without that much else to offer afterwards.
Indeed. Toy Mechanic. Now here we are. Heavy Mac 2. And there's another review that's about to go live, so we'll have that too. But Heavy Mac, very similar to Mech Wars, or whatever it's called. Basically, it's a game in which you play in some kind of large Ed 209-like machine killing stuff. Spanner reviewed it, gave it an 8 out of 10. The menu system and inventory aren't intuitive, but fortunately it's a doddle to drive a mech and lay waste to every piece of machinery you see. So it's a game about destruction in which destruction is its salvation. Much like the film 2012.
Yeah, that's going to be my weekend viewing, I think. I'm going to have to partake in that film, despite my better judgment.
It very much depends on what your threshold is for nonsense, but it is nonsense, but I utterly and unreservedly was able to forgive it, that because it was just so just so tidal wavy.
Yeah.
Volcano-y. I mean, a film in which there is a tsunami which consumes the planet.
Yeah.
And the eruption of the Yellowstone volcano, which, as we all know, is the you know, the major threat to human life on Earth. And there's a sequence where, because the kind of coastal shelf is shifting and moving, basically Los Angeles just falls apart, and it just falls into the sea.
Uh-huh.
And as it's falling into the sea, the ground is, and there's a guy flying a plane.
Uh-huh.
And he's trying to, it's difficult for him to kind of get, the runway's falling apart, he doesn't get much air, so he's flying along, and at one point the plane dips down and he's under where the ground used to be, and a train comes out of the ground, like out of a tunnel.
Uh-huh.
That because of things that are happening is now above the plane. So the plane is like flying through this city that's falling apart, and then flies down, it's trying to get up, and then a train comes out of a tunnel into midair over the plane.
Holy shit.
And,
wow.
And it's an underground train, by the way. So, you know, need I say more? I don't think so.
Does it involve some sort of square-jawed guys standing around an implausibly advanced holographic display of what's happening, stroking their chins and debating about what they're going to do, whilst one of them peels off to go and make an emergency call to his family to warn them? Does it involve that scene? I bet you my left bollock it does.
There is pretty much, yeah. I mean, there's a ludicrous, there's some kind of modelling that I'm not sure I believe. Like, someone will say, the crust has just broken in India. And he'll say, model me what's going to happen now. And then they'll say, right, there's a tidal wave. It's going to be here in 13 minutes. And he's like, nah, probably they couldn't be that accurate. I don't think. So that seems a bit implausible. But there are no kind of hovering displays or anything like that.
But there are
lots of scenes where, we're speaking about this with Tom, our intern in the Pocket Gamer offices in Bath. We were talking about the kind of utilitarian argument,
uh-huh.
which is that there are moments in the film where basically what remains of the human race, and this is a spoiler alert, but, you know, this is not a film in which suspense plays any part. there's a point at which the entire human race, or at least a third of it, because there are three big ships called arcs,
uh-huh.
the human race is kind of going to save themselves. And the entire human race is distributed across these three arcs. Everything that remains of it. And animals and artworks and things like that are on these arcs. And one of them, so this is a third of the population of the planet, is
uh-huh.
one of these arcs. And these people who weren't allowed to get on it for some reason kind of mob up at the outside of the door. And there is 13 minutes to go until the tidal wave arrives, which they know to the second. And so these people are going to go, let me in. And the guy's going, no, we can't open the door, because then if we open the door, then we probably won't be able to get it closed in time. And this guy, like the main guy in it, the hero, says, uh-huh. But, you know, I don't want to be part of a human race that, you know, if we don't let them in, we've already failed. We've lost our humanity. And this other guy, very sensibly in my view, but he's the bad guy, is saying, no, the entire human race will be lost. Because you want to let in those 50 people over there.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. But eventually, like all the other countries, like they're all up on a monitor, and like Russia and France and England all go, we let people in. We want to let the people in. And everybody says, no, humanity is more important than survival or something like that. So let them in. Something goes wrong. That's, you know, there's a bit of tension. So because of the good guy doing something bad and snagging up the equipment and machinery, so nearly the human race nearly dies out,
uh-huh.
because of the hero of the film,
yeah.
trying to selfishly sneak onto the ship. So it's this weird thing like that Hollywood has, that, and it reminds me of another film, bang it on here, but there's a film, Swordfish, with John Travolta and
Halle Berry.
And Halle Berry, yes. The first topless outing for Halle Berry, I think we all appreciated that. And in that film, there's a bit where John Travolta plays this kind of cyber terrorist who's this really kind of smart, slick terrorist who's going to kill lots of people, but with ultimate aim of improving mankind. And Hugh Jackman learns of this dastardly plot. And it is dastardly. There's no way around it. But John Travolta says to him, if you had to kill a baby to save 100,000 lives, would you do it? And Hugh Jackman just goes, no. And you go, no, do it. Kill the baby. What are you talking about? But it's this weird kind of, it's Kantian, but this weird kind of idiotic moral universe that American film stars inhabit, where they don't really think about moral consequences or anything. They're just things you don't do. You don't kill people. If somebody wants to get on the ship, you let them on the ship.
Sure.
Irrespective of the consequences. But philosophically, it was wrong to let the people on the ship in 2012. Even if it turns out right. Philosophically, it was wrong. It would be wrong not to kill the baby, even though at the end of that film, you know, Hugh Jackman wins and John Travolta loses. It has this weird kind of logic. I'm sure... you know, the whole generation of Americans and I guess people from around the world consuming those films will grow up with this really skewed morality, which isn't based on practical life in the world, but it's just based on the fact that there are certain things you should never do, even if it means human race dies.
That's right. Yeah. I wonder if we could come up with a list of the top five things that are taught by American films that you must never do, even though, you know, to a sensible person, you probably should do them, given the circumstances.
It's completely different from what, of course, occurs in American society. Which is, you know, in American films, you must never kill a baby. In American society at large, you must never kill a baby with life insurance, with health insurance. So there are discrepancies there. Oh, yeah. Look who's arrived.
Who is it?
Christopher James.
Oh, you're kidding me on.
Should we come on for like the last 2 seconds?
Right, okay.
Okay, let's have him in. He's coming in.
Chris.
Hello.
How are you?
Good morning. Chris.
Morning.
How disappointing. Morning, yes. Just. So I take it we were speculating that you woke up behind a skip in central London with a newspaper over your face after an industry bash. Is this correct?
That's broadly accurate. Yeah. It's been the Mobile Games Forum the last few days, so I've been in town and, sleeping in various skips around and on park benches around central London.
The question on everybody's lips, Chris, is did you on this occasion go to the YMCA to be sick on your trousers?
There was no sickness involved. There was no sickness involved, although I was actually a guest at the Oxo Tower restaurant yesterday evening.
Wow.
So if I'd been sick, I could have projectile vomited over the well-to-do of London into the Thames.
That would have been quite spectacular.
It should have been spectacular, yeah. But yes. Grand Theft Auto, Charlestown Waters, eh? What do we think? No, sorry.
Too late. Yeah.
I'm a big fan. I started playing it today. I've got to practice a bit more, but yes.
Yeah, we are too. We give it a thorough thumbs up, I think.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's goodbye from me.
Yeah, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.